lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we've got a friend of the pod, Dario, MotoGP finance guy, on for another episode. Thanks so much for coming on, mate. Really appreciate it.
Yo, thanks for having me, man. It's good to hear your guys' voices.
Where are you these days? You're bloody all over the world normally.
I'm in Cape Town, South Africa. So just visiting friends and family and trying to enjoy some of the good weather outside of European winter right now. You guys in Oz, right?
Yeah.
Haven't left.
Yeah. Nice and hot over here. 40 plus degrees, dying in the Melbourne heat.
Do you have AC, actually?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Well, dude, some houses here don't, man. It's like,
what?
You just cook. Yeah. Luckily, it's a little bit. It's a little bit, cooler. It's probably about 28 degrees Celsius, but still, no AC sucks, man.
Fucking hell, man. South Africa, yeah. Get some Philips aircon going.
Makes us tough. Well, anyway.
That's awesome.
Cool. So what's happening?
Yeah, so we've got a few things that run past you. I think we've been, there's a few things happening 26, probably more 27. MotoGP is changing, I think, in a good way. Things about to pop, boiling at the surface. So thoughts on next year, thoughts on 27. New teams, China coming in possibly is the word on the street lately. What's your thought?
Yeah, I think lots. I think just to reiterate, and it's the narrative, if you've been following my page, you'd probably get it, which is that 2027 is going to be the real start of the Liberty era. I think there's this mistake, which I've seen being pushed on corporate social media, predominantly LinkedIn, and in some instances on traditional social media, which is that MotoGP or Dorna had one of its most successful years in 2025 because of Liberty's involvement. And that is actually wrong. Mm. Because as we all know, with the EU Commission taking so long to approve the deal, let's get real, circumstantially, if anything, there may have been some slow introduction of Liberty-led staff into the corporate structure. But inevitably, the calendar was set as is. Mark's return is Mark's return. Mm. Pecco's downfall, or should I say Pecco's struggles were Pecco's struggles. And everyone else in between, is inconsequential with respect to Liberty's involvement. However, when it comes to the likes of involvement of new teams, the involvement of China, like you've mentioned, and most importantly in 2027, which I can't wait for, which is, the banning of ride height devices and hole shot devices. Obviously there's the change in engine capacity from 1000cc to 850cc for those that don't know. I think it adds a new dimension to what, not to take anything away from Mark's comeback, was to me not the most exhilarating season. Actually, I was watching the MotoGP put together a highlights package of kind of the best battles of 2025, and it was all right. I prefer watching more nostalgic seasons, but I'll pause there.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Technology has really overtaken MotoGP to a degree. Like, it's always still going to come down to a rider. Like, you look at Marc Marquez versus Pecco, like, there's your A and B test right there to a degree.
Totally.
But compared, like, we watched 2015 Phillip Island, and bro, like, obviously it's one of the best races of all time.
Dude.
But the passing there and just like cutting back on each other, two people passing in the same corner, it doesn't really happen as much in MotoGP these days. And that's obviously due to aero and ride height devices. Which I think 2027 is, I want to call it the great reset of MotoGP almost, to a degree.
Totally. Yeah, I would agree. And there's obviously Mark's future, which is in question. But what I think is important to emphasize here, and I was thinking about it this morning in particular, which is guys like Fabio and even Pedro Acosta, Firmin, Aldeguer, and even maybe some newer riders that will come into the premier class or end up just entered. This gives them a chance to, be more competitive, should I say, on equal footing as the Ducati Cup hopefully breaks away. We start to see more of a push towards independent teams, which is an opportunity for more team ownership outside of the traditional MotoGP ecosystem, injection of more sponsorship dollars, and an overall growth in the sport. But let's talk about China, right? And that's, I think, I mean, fundamentally, it makes logical sense, does it not? I don't
Yeah,
know. What are your
100%.
guys' initial reactions on this? Because we
Well, I
haven't
think
discussed
so.
this offline, so
Yeah.
this is real, you know?
Well, it's a funny trend happening in Australia where Chinese products get a bad name, but everyone seems to just buy them, you know? Chinese cars, for instance, massive at the moment, like just taking over. And I'm sure it's everywhere in the world. So for a brand like CF Moto to come into MotoGP and for have that cash investment from China, I think it's a great thing.
It's funny. Tom has been in the car industry for a long time, and I've been in the motorcycle industry for a long time. And we've kind of seen Tom's seen the car side of it, and I've seen the motorcycle side of it. And like, you look at, I don't know, MG 10 years ago, 5 years ago, nowhere. And now you're seeing them everywhere. Same with CF Moto. They were like, you wouldn't even touch one of a 10-foot pole, like they had electrical problems. And now all young kids are riding them. They've got winglets on them. So popular and selling a ton of them. So we're really seeing the rise here in Australia, which makes us think, and there's rumors like you've been big on the Chinese band.
I think, it's
You've been watching that.
if you rock up. If you rock up to your mate's house and you've got a Chinese car or bike and they go, oh, cool. That's everything. That's changed everyone's opinion. So for me, it has to be a push. And I think 27, and they're talking CF Moto, they're also talking a Chinese Grand Prix at Shanghai, I'm assuming. We probably all agree on that,
Yeah, I get
which is a
that.
great track. They used to race there.
Back in 08, roughly 09, for a couple of years.
Lorenzo
Correct.
sending himself to the moon from
Yeah.
memory, standard.
Yeah,
But yeah, great track and it's good for the sport. I mean, you look at China and Formula One, it's the they sold out that joint where they got, 25,000 people on a Sunday there and only 10, 15 years ago. So
was it really only 25,000?
yeah. Yeah, when
Wow.
you got,
Yeah.
a billion population. So if the times are changing, definitely.
So Tommy, anyway, I've been looking at getting a new helmet.
Okay, right you
A
are.
replica helmet.
Okay.
So I'm looking at either like a Marc Marquez, Shoei, Rossi AGV, or controversially like a Nakagami Arai. What do you think?
Well, I think Nakagami Arai might be a bad idea because they'd have to build them strong. Repeat hits throughout the whole weekend. So
That's right.
where
That's
would you
right.
find something like that?
Mate, motoheaven.com.au. They have all the helmet brands that you want. They've got all the racing suits, jackets, big brands, HJC, Shoei, Dainese, Alps. Mate, they have everything. How good's that?
That is so good. And I heard like there's free delivery over $150 as well.
Free delivery over $150. Super, super fast dispatch, which is amazing all around the country. They do an excellent job. You just check out their Google reviews. It's like all 5 stars. It's pretty amazing. They do
Or
a great job.
give the people the website.
Motoheaven.com.au. Check them out. They are the best in the business for all your motorcycle needs. And they've got a parts finder. You can get all the parts you want: brake discs, chains, sprockets, spark plugs. I know that's all gobbledygook to you, Tom, but that is the they are the best in the business. Head down to motorheaven.com.au and they will look after you.
Well, big question is what is brand affinity these days? Because you've both pointed it out, both in the car industry as well as the motorcycle industry. I don't think people really care anymore because it's down to functionality and cost, a byproduct of the macroeconomic environment. I totally agree with you, Tom. Even in South Africa, spending time here, there are a ton of Chinese cars in the market. Why? They have strong service plans, they're competitively priced, and they've caught up on design, which is something that they lacked previously. Now, my side note opinion is that their branding kind of sucks. There's no need to put huge branding with some weird name on the front, maybe just include a slight logo. But we're starting to see aftermarket kits that are removing that. So the car industry only has itself to blame, predominantly German manufacturers charging too much, poor service plans, and other issues, should I say European-based manufacturers. In the biking industry, we have a similar notion where bikes have almost, I mean, the cost of bikes are insane, but also, and again, now I might be biased in my viewpoint here, but if I look at the likes of my father's generation, very much involved in, inspired by two wheels and so involved in the racing community, bikes were so important because it was also a byproduct of cost and just a byproduct of the times. As the costs of cars holistically have become more affordable, depending on where you live and what brand you go for, the likes of motorcycles have become, I guess, more niche and also, in my opinion, quite expensive. You know, maybe it might take purists like ourselves to appreciate the likes of an MV Agusta, an Aprilia, Ducati, etc., and a Japanese bike. But for new entrants, they just want to get from A to B. Yeah. And again, when you look at CF Moto, they've caught up on the filing, something which some of the brands, at least European and Japanese brands, are missing. Does it make natural sense to go after the East or the Far East? Of course. Why? Because predominantly those are the markets where people are riding two wheels every day. You know, in other markets, I mean, even the likes of the United States, while it is an attractive opportunity and there's a lot of untapped value there, realistically, not that many people ride the types of motorbikes that we're used to. And I guess that maybe that natural connection between MotoGP riders and gladiators needs to kind of come over time. Whereas I think in the Far East, it's kind of more, I would say, assumed, because there's a natural connectivity between the sport and day-to-day transport. And as we've seen that with the likes of the Indonesian GP, etc. Now, what does that mean for Liberty strategy? Well, I don't think you can replicate verbatim the F1 strategy. While you might encourage more increased interest from an investment perspective from the United States, I think inevitably, in order to maximize the investment potential, the spectacle, and the popularity of the sport, I don't necessarily agree that it's purely going to be a US-led strategy moving forward.
Oh, I think the Asian market, they have to attack. I mean, like, you look at superbikes. I mean, they don't go to any Asian countries. I mean, it's just ludicrous.
The European Cup.
It's just crazy when you think you go to Thailand and, you know, anywhere in Indonesia, and it's bikes, bikes, bikes. And they've got Marquez scooters over there, you know.
It's crazy.
But the market's definitely untapped. I think China's a great thing for the sport. You are right about the States. I think America isn't solely the key, but geez, it has been the key for Formula One, as you said.
Yeah, but going on to that as well, with MotoGP and comparing it to Formula One, Formula One goes off the basis of drama, personalities, where MotoGP, the great thing about that sport is it can go off to danger as well. You know, like, it's the personalities as well. But, you know, there's no injuries realistically in Formula One. There obviously is, and there's been deaths. We understand that. But, no world champion misses the last five rounds, really, in Formula One, like Marc Marquez did, because he crashed and got his arm broken and, you know, whatever, whatever. Like, that's its whole... that's almost like the gem in MotoGP that they can then exploit to the American market.
I would agree, but they haven't done so. And that's why it's marketing, 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 which
Correct.
Is where I point fingers at Dorna. If they could, I rate they'd just have a purely Spanish championship at this rate. if things didn't change hands. You still have too many Spanish races on the calendar. And that's, you know, in my view, untapped opportunity, because you also need to balance the likes of what that calendar represents, because it's so much more than just riders and bikes. It's the logistics and every other component around structuring and getting these races on board. Kind of just lost my train of thought.
Does it need an American rider? Because when we had Nicky Hayden, Colin Edwards, there was two. But at one stage, I think there was two races on the... Did they run Laguna and Indy in the same
year? Yeah, they did.
At one point?
I think they did, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So there was two right there. Two races in America. So, like, it's almost like they had a crack. And it's... Nicky Hayden was... I remember... This is an obscure fact that I have right now. But he was voted, like, the most handsome athlete in America at one point. Like,
really?
Back in the day. So, like, there was a bit of notoriety about MotoGP. Ridiculous fact
that
I know, but...
No, but think about it, right? When Valentino was dominating, that's why I always talk about, you know, the marketability of riders, you know, cover of Rolling Stone, dating models, involved in a lot of the kind of edgy, sexy publications, very good with the camera, you know, Nicky Hayden being a US world champion, you have to give it to the United States, always promoting their athletes irrespective of the sport. There's huge weighting behind that. Massive.
Yeah.
And there is a pipeline problem. And so, you know, it's about how do you fix that pipeline problem? Well, then we need to turn to the likes of Moto America, and how do we inject more sponsorship dollars into that championship in order to encourage more eyeballs? Now, the way they've gone about it now is to introduce this Baggers series, which I think is quite smart, especially considering Harley kind of screwed itself and is now in a position where they're trying to rebuild. I mean, the idea of an electric Harley Davidson still blows my mind. But that's a different discussion. I think that that will help to bring more eyeballs into the sport, because something that's important to also talk about is attending Daytona 200 this past year in 2025. The actual race, which as we know is predominantly superbikes, is, in my opinion, was poorly attended. I mean, I couldn't even get an energy drink there, to be honest with you, which is kind of weird, despite all the sponsors. And you go outside the racetrack and the streets are packed. I mean, it's insane. The only thing separating the two is a fence. And it's like, well, but why? And it's because all those guys and girls are riding Harleys, etc. The superbike or sports bike market has changed. And then, you know, if you really wanted to go, and I don't want to go down this road, but if you look at the AMA and the structure and relationships with Japanese manufacturers and what Matt Ladd and Ben Spies were earning at the time, I mean, you could have a very lucrative career in AMA. Yes, and that's what, and that that competitive nature is what led to Spies, you know, winning the World Superbike Championship in his rookie year, which to me is an unforgettable season. And so I think there's some grassroots investments that need to happen, and I think it's been great to see that there's this kind of 24-hour channel. I haven't heard much more about that in the US, but you know, we do have some US riders in the Red Bull Rookies. There's obviously Joe Roberts in Moto2, although I don't know if Joe's maybe, and I mean this with respect, has maybe passed the sell-by date and being able to capitalize on this Liberty-led era in 2027 unless the results change very quickly. What do you guys think?
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, he really needed to show everything he could this year, I think. And like the spots are just filling up. I mean, we all don't see Joe Roberts in a MotoGP team,
which is crazy because like a year and a half ago, his name was everywhere for Trackhouse. And he was injured at the start of the year. And Moto2 can turn on a dime pretty quickly, good or bad. But you know, I think the next American hero is someone we probably haven't heard of yet.
Yeah. I think there's KDJ in the Red Bull Rookies. He's quite tall, though. He seems to be doing, you know, seems to be getting on quite nicely. Talking of the UK, though, is another territory which has been quite interesting. You know, Jake Dixon moving over from Moto2 into World Superbike. You know, interesting to see what his times look like most recently and some of his spills. But again, another one which was, you know, I think a couple of years ago really kind of primed for that jump at the MotoGP. But something which I think so many people forget is that it's not just about, look, nationality is really important. That trickles down into TV rights and viewership, etc. But, you know, they want to keep the grid tight, which falls into the discussion that we mentioned earlier. How does CF Moto get involved? And how do newer manufacturers get involved? What implications does a change in strategic direction have in terms of the manufacturer profile, the number of available spots, and how does that then affect how we position Moto2 and Moto3?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting going forward for next year how much Dorna have influence over who rides on MotoGP. I mean, you got Marrera, which I think's been backed by MotoGP. Top Rack's probably the same.
Yeah, Miller was the same.
Miller's the same. They want an Aussie. You know, obviously they want the Turkish and then obviously the Brazilian Grand Prix. How much influence have they got over who goes in which team? I find that fascinating.
Totally agree. I mean, look, I've got the viewership numbers on a race per race, or, you know, any broadcast. And even someone like Brad, who's South African, there is still a loyal fan base, right? And at least there's some African exposure to the sport. But with the current KTM debacle, where does that leave someone like Brad? You know, every time I talk about it, people sometimes berate me for why you're being negative. But the truth of the matter is KDM is not out the woods at all.
Yeah. They need to
do that. So definitely
Chinese
there's
money.
Definitely some massaging involved in terms of the diversity of the grid globally, because, you know, at the end of the day, this is a product and they're trying to maximize exposure. But I think that perhaps if there was, like I've always said, Liberty is essentially an outsourced marketing and sales function for Dorna that has built what we all believe and would agree is a fantastic product that is poorly marketed. And going back to your point around Mark's crash and missing the last five races, I still can't, you know, shout out to Jorge Lorenzo, you know, being able to, breaking his collarbone, having an off and still racing on the Sunday. Nowadays, I don't think that'd be allowed.
No.
True. Yeah, you're probably
They
right.
won't get
Actually, yeah,
puffed.
no way. Fitness, yeah.
Yeah. Now
Petty.
going back a few points, independent teams going forward in MotoGP. What's your thoughts on that as an investment side of things?
I think it's great. They need it, right? I mean, look, sponsorship is a struggle for all teams involved, even at a factory level. They need to open this up. That being said, though, I guess cutting your nose to spite your face is also challenging because, well, if I'm a brand, do I invest? Do I sponsor that in terms of value? And obviously, depending on my geographic positioning, F1 is more baked, right? So it kind of makes more sense to go that direction. But if you're going to pay a 10 times multiple on advertising space versus a MotoGP bike, it depends how big your budget is. That being said, I think, I mean, look at independent teams. If there was a team for sale, who's going to sell? I'll put that question to you. If you look at the current teams on the grid, who do you think would be for sale? Who do you think could be for sale?
Well, I just can't believe like Tech Three. That was just came out of the blue for me. I don't know why he would sell that at this point in time. When things are about to boom, or did he get the right price?
I think you got the right price for the effort. I mean, practically got the team for free, right? So you're walking away with a big chunk of change. And I wouldn't be surprised, and I still back this theory that Dorna was directly involved in that. I mean, look, it was an investment consortium, so it was a variety of investors. Günther Steiner is a great poster child and Trojan horse for bridging the gap between F1 and
Oh,
MotoGP.
for sure.
Textbook play, right? So I think to make that sort of return on the investment, to step away and say, look, I've done my thing, is one thing. But also maybe it's important to discuss because you've seen Marco Simoncelli, the late Marco Simoncelli's father, be quite kind of publicly express his concern for new management's, which is what implications do potential rule changes and Liberty's involvement have on the should I say the DNA of the sport for purists, right? Because you've got to think from their perspective, it's do I just throw the baby out with the bathwater and say screw it, we're going for new fans and we're focusing on Asia and this is how we're going to do it, and everyone else, I mean, truth is most people, I mean most guys and girls our age outside of maybe Southern Europe and key markets in Asia, I don't know how many really watch MotoGP, because even a conversation I had last night in the investment world, somebody was getting confused between MotoGP and motocross, and I had to interject and say there is a difference between the two, right? And they saw the local news stations promoting COTA as a motocross event, right? So the question is, for Liberty as well, it's like, well, how do we carry through guys and girls within our age group and younger? But at the same time, what's the trade-off here?
Yeah, that's a real fine line. And we've spoken to Oz GP about this, funny enough, and it's they're very cautious of not upsetting the fan that's been there for 30 years at Phillip Island, but then bringing new fans in. And I think it's for the markets like Australia, United States, UK, it's an older generation market. Like you go down to Phillip
Totally.
Islands, Silverstone, whatever, it's a very much an older generation market. So I think for those regions, you've got no choice but to market to the younger generation. And through social media is probably the biggest thing to capture. I honestly find, I've said it so many times that I really do, and Tom, you've said it, it's bubbling at the surface with MotoGP with the younger female audience. Like we see it more in our data. We know of our listeners. We did a Spotify Wrapped, I only just did it the other day for Motorsport Republica, and our listeners, our second biggest artist for our listeners was Taylor Swift. I was like, what the fuck? We must have
Really?
a shit ton of female listeners, which we do through like
You're making an assumption there.
and analytics. Well, when Taylor Swift sells out the MCG twice, that's like 90% women. Yeah, got a pretty good assumption.
Well, you're right, man. Fastest growing demographic in across MotoGP's social pages between 16 and 34. I think, side joke, but I guess there's truth to what I'm trying to say here, is Eminem performed at COTA for Formula One, one of the most successful events. Maybe they should try to get Taylor Swift to do a show for MotoGP.
Not a
Wouldn't
crazy
be a bad
idea.
thing.
Not a fan.
No, it's not. And people might cringe at it, but like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's entertainment that we are selling here. And that's part of it's about experience. And at the end of the day, younger people do not actually, contrary to what people think and hypothesize during COVID, and we see about this predominantly in the private investment space, don't want to be sitting in, contradictory for me to say this, and if we could do this in person, we would. They don't want to be sitting indoors on a screen. They want to go out. That's why even the, I know this sounds really lame, and but even the dating app market is changing tremendously because younger people want to go out and meet people in person. That's why you see running clubs and all these things happen. So to get more younger people involved, why are we not encouraging them to want to go to these events? The problem is that if you're focusing only on the racing, for somebody that's not educated in the space and doesn't have any relationship to any of the riders involved, do you really care? Don't know, you know? When I was a young kid watching my brother race, I enjoyed it because I saw my brother racing. But if he wasn't racing, I didn't know anyone else. Who cares? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think there's it's very interesting to see, again, from a corporate strategy perspective, and this is where the debate comes in, and I'm curious in your take, is you're bringing people in that have absolutely zero background or experience in MotoGP, motorsport, or Dorna's inner workings. Is this a good thing or is it a bad thing?
Well, it's interesting you say that because we Phillip Island this year, they brought all these celebrities on the Sunday. Like, yeah. I reckon there was that room that was probably, I don't know.
Aussie celebrities. Oh, Aussie, Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, but,
big
well,
Chris Hemsworth, but we know he likes bikes. Yeah. You know?
But 50 to 60 of these celebrities they invited down, they were like deer in headlights. They're walking down, not going, what the fuck's going on? They're taking videos and trying to like talk to the riders while they're on the grid. Like, they got no fucking idea.
It annoys the shit out of me. So
yeah, but so in saying that, like if I'm talking to my missus and she goes, oh fuck, Chris Hemsworth was at the MotoGP, that's cool. Like there's also that side of it where it might go, oh, that might get for someone to go, I'm gonna watch that, this is kind of cool. Yeah. So it's like we have to look at it at both sides, because I know for a lot of people, like in Vegas, they want to be seen, so people want to be there, then they get the rappers, and a whole different demographic comes and watches the race as well. So it's hard for us to say as in a marketing ploy.
It's kind of, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, either way.
But do we apply this strategy to Asia?
Well, yeah.
No.
Because the stickiness.
Probably not.
You don't think so?
You get like a Indonesian singer.
Well, yeah, singing. I guess you could get like a, yeah, that's true.
You get a K-pop band to come
in. Yeah, 100%. You know? Yeah, then you're right. I'm thinking like, I don't know, who's a Western star, Will Smith or something like that.
But, well, like, I don't know, you take John Cena, like really good example, right? Learned Mandarin, like made a mistake when he made that press release and it really became a problem, right? So there are big cultural nuances here, which any corporate would have to be very careful of if you're trying to go and run Western US strategy alongside Asia or China in particular, right? But going back to the team thing, I guess the question I have for you is, you look at the current, I mean, there aren't that many independent teams right now, and who would really sell? I mean,
maybe Big Dog Campagnotti might get a big check or something. That'd be the only one that I reckon who would maybe. But it's got to be an ego thing for them. And I don't know how you feel about this with sponsorship. Is there a portion of people want their names on the bike for an ego point of view? Is it really that much of a brand growth for a lot of people? Like those big dogs I'm talking about.
Dude, I mean, truthfully, depending on the class, some people are sponsoring purely for other reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, in this data-led world, there are ways to measure whether sponsorship translates into increased exposure and sales for your brand, right? Yeah. And as we've spoken about before, the size of a motorcycle is particularly small, so there have to be other ways in order to encourage brand activations. It is a challenge for most to really think about how they can leverage MotoGP to help them sell more products. Because to your point, unless it's, you know, an oil, maybe a related apparel brand, an energy drink, etc., this is not a data-led sport in the way that Formula One is. So there is there is no use case for data-led companies to actively involve themselves to the extent that they have in Formula One. And I'm hoping and praying that that does not change, because I would hate to see a rider be a passenger on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that would just destroy the sport. Yeah. But for other technology players, as soon as at a corporate level, they're able to open up the narrative, like we've spoken about, right? Then I think it makes a lot more sense because you sponsor on the basis of the level of exposure. But right now, if I'm a brand, I will get more value posting on Instagram than I would on a MotoGP bike, in my view, on average. I'm just saying on average, right? All things considered, someone might crucify me in the comments, but like, you know, I just, that's what I fundamentally believe.
No, it's interesting. I mean, Jack Miller's personal sponsor is Caterpillar, which is like a machinery company in Australia. They ain't selling any machines because he's on the helmet. The owner of Caterpillar is probably like, I like this guy. You know, I want to support him. That's the difference, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's passion, right? We saw it even in South Africa in the early 2000s. You had the mobile networks that were all involved in the National Superbike Series when it, in my view, kind of peaked. And that was because they all had a keen interest in motorsport, motorcycles.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when it fundamentally came down to it, they realized the biggest segment or sporting segment to generate the highest ROI was football. Or soccer for US audiences. So all the money left motorsport and went directly into football. And I can't blame them, even though I would have loved for them to stick around motorcycles because I think it would have helped the national series. I mean, what effect does it have on the Australian national series? And I'm also curious to ask you guys, what do you think about the talent pipeline for Aussie riders in the short to midterm?
There is a stronger focus on it with Oceania Junior Cup and like the Vale series and Moto Stars of Damo Cudlin. And it is, I think, getting stronger and stronger. I think the worst pipeline is the American pipeline. I think they're really struggling. But for the Aussies,
you have to go to Europe though.
Yeah,
as young age.
Correct.
You have to.
And that's the financial toll that a family has to take and the risk, you know. Australia, we do so well in the motorcycle and the motorsport world, even though we're so far away from everything. But somehow,
you guys do. I've always talked about it.
Yeah, like for some reason, we always nab one or two riders and, you know, drivers or whatever it is. And we do really well. But, you know, it is very competitive. Like a flat track scene is massive in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, and that helps with like Jack Miller or Senna Agius or whatever. A lot of them all come from motocross. When you're talking about our national series, you know, like those guys aren't getting paid millions of dollars, that's for sure. Like it is very family orientated run, and how the series is run hasn't been the greatest, we would say, definitely. They've just changed it where now it's always been through winter, so the weather's always been shit. So especially going down to Phillip Island in July, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Bad
yeah,
in October, yeah. July, it's shocking. Now it's over summer. What they can do is bring in, you know, talent, European talent, because it's their off season. So hopefully that generates a bit more in the Australian series, a bit more interest for the Aussie fans, because it needs it. We all want it.
Agreed. So talking about that, right? Let's go into Moto 2, Moto 3, right? Pipeline. Now, I think what's always been most compelling to me is the fact that Dorna has always packaged a really awesome day of racing for viewers and fans. And I think that the continuity program and the exposure that's provided to riders from, you know, 14 right up is great. Now, you know, there's rumors about that being under threat. There's talk about how they're going to change the paddock pass structure, what implications that might have on talent developments. And storytelling narratives, just kind of knee-jerk reaction on your part?
Well, I think it's crazy. I think Moto 2 and Moto 3 as a fan, that's going to help grow the sport even more, and not bringing it to every event, I think it's a terrible idea. And I feel really strongly about that.
Mm. Yeah, I couldn't agree
like
more.
Like having the local series and MotoGP and then a bagger series for a race weekend, I don't think it's enough for the fan for a 40-minute race and a 20-minute sprint.
It's
I don't think it's enough.
No. Yeah, 100%.
It's not. I mean, look, like what I was shocked to hear is speaking to specific people that you would expect that would be watching every class.
Mm.
They don't bother Moto3 and Moto2.
And it makes no sense.
That's wild to me. I mean, you know, as purists, I watch all the racing and it's really great to track them over time. And, you know, you look at it from both a team perspective, who's probably not going to be around because they've run out of money or they're not performing or whatever it might be. And so, you know, I think I completely agree with you. I also want to mention that this whole idea of introducing sprint races to increase attendance on a Saturday, I personally don't believe that that is working. Might be a controversial take, I know, and we you know, we always see about record numbers, but truth is they triple count. So, or you know, like, I don't know what a sprint race really does for the sports. And I think that, the only thing, I couldn't wait when I was younger for the Sunday race. However, if there was pure domination, then it was like, oh, well, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2012. I think it was a flat spot season where it was just like a walk away for the Repsol Honda team. Views on sprint races?
I love them. Personally.
As a fan on a Saturday night here in Australia, like we get the race at like 11 p.m. on a Saturday or 10 p.m. Whatever. Yeah. For me, it works for awesome. Like it really does. But it has taken a little bit off the main race for me. So I don't like, and we probably thought both that if whoever won on Saturday was going to win on Sunday, it hasn't necessarily been the case.
Which is great.
But I feel it just takes a little bit of sting out of the Sunday race, but I still am a fan of the sprint race. And I think as a fan, it's something that it's a good positive thing they've done in the last few
and
years.
And I think adding on to that, being at the track on a Saturday, it makes it more exciting.
The Saturday's the best.
Because if you got qualifying in the morning, you've got, you know, you can chill out or watch Moto3, Moto2, and then you've got that sprint race in the Arvo. So, and I was against it. When it first came in, I was out on record and I was like, nah, purist, but prove me wrong. I love it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I just wonder whether it does translate numbers-wise. But to your point, I mean, it really clicked for me. I was watching Catalunya live, and it was a Saturday, and there was no sprint race. And I remember just being like, why did I even bother coming here? Like, it was such a hack to get to the circuit. And Catalunya is not so difficult, actually. But it's like, okay, I've got to go home and come back tomorrow, and hopefully it changes, you know? and again, it goes back to that entertainment spectacle. And actually, the Catalunya race is great because they have the Monster Energy riot rig, I think it is, which, you know, is quite entertaining as well.
And the other thing with sprint races, if you go and see your favorite rider for the weekend and they crash that first lap on a Sunday, that's all you see. If they crash on Saturday, at least you can back it up on a Sunday.
That's a good point.
That was actually Catalunya, I think it was 2019 when Lorenzo on the Honda, you know, skittled everybody. Yeah, and I was like, awesome. Oh. First corner, I'm done. What a race. You know, but shame that Honda was not great. You know, out of curiosity, talking of Jorge Lorenzo, I'm curious because we haven't spoken about this around the Maverick Viñales coaching, setup.
It's very funny on social media. I think it's probably the funniest thing I've ever seen, those two together, because they're kind of both just memes.
They're just too mean.
We spoke about it with Chris Vermeulen when we won, and we had a good laugh. Like, what Jorge Lorenzo puts up on social media is hilarious. Like, it's like Rocky and Apollo Creed hugging and the beach, and it's like him and Maverick Viñales. I love it.
They've got a camera crew. He's got like a 24-hour camera crew.
There's Jorge Lorenzo, like, there's like Maverick Viñales sideways on a speedway track. There's Jorge Lorenzo with like a notepad, like a turtleneck, writing stuff down, like a photo of him all posed for it. And I think it's great. Like, I love it. And I hope Mav does really well. He looked so good at the start of last year as well. Like, he was great. And I hope nothing but the best, because I want to see more of that content purely from
Jorge. I've got Mav for a couple of wins this year.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I think it's great. Again, exposure is what the sport needs, right? Yeah. So it's great, again, to focus on some MotoGP legends, still being involved actively in the paddock. You know, even when I was in Austria, and, you know, we saw Casey being so vocal about some of the changes in dynamics. It was really great to see some of the legends being more involved. And I would love to see more of that moving forward, particularly when it comes to mentorship. And you know, obviously we have Vales involved in the VR46 team, and hopefully we'll start to see his increasing involvement in the paddock. As
I think he is. I think he's stepping away from the touring car, whatever it is, and doing more with VR46.
That's correct. And so, I mean, I'm fired up for this year. I'm really hoping it brings closer racing.
What's your prediction? What's your prediction of racing? And
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot here. I actually haven't really thought about it just yet. Let me answer it this way, and I could be eating my words here so badly. This might age so badly. But I think there's a lot of hype around Toprak, but I'm not impressed with the Yamaha.
I couldn't agree more. I've said it a thousand times already.
I think for Toprak, for Acosta, and for a couple other riders, for Quartararo, like, they could all be at the sharp end, but I don't think they're on the right tools.
Correct. Yeah.
And so I'm hoping Yogo Morea actually impresses, because Honda continues to improve at a rapid rate in comparison to Yamaha. So I'm hoping that he's a bit of a dark horse. Eldegar, I like him. My worry is this: KTM and the current situation makes me question how much more dollars they're going to inject to develop the bike, because their future remains in question for 27 right now. Yamaha, I don't rate, unfortunately, even though I love the brand. Honda, I think, is getting on quite nicely, but Aprilia, I mean, come on, Pateki. If he can continue to build on momentum, I'd really love, man, I would kill to see him win a championship. I really would. And hopefully that motivates Pecco and Ducati to try and sort this out. But if the 25 bike sucks so much, there are a whole bunch of riders that are about to get one. So
that's right.
Let's see what happens.
Going back to KDM real quick, I know we're going to 2027. They have been testing the 850cc bike. You know, there was that Jerez. I think the Spargo was testing that bike. Is it not a foregone conclusion that they'll be there for 2027, in your opinion?
I would agree. Yes, I do not believe that it is a foregone conclusion that they will be there next year.
Yeah,
wow. You've got to remember that there is a bit of legacy involved in terms of the development of that bike. You also have to remember that they also need to put on a united front for the media. And also that would encourage additional buyers and other manufacturers or investors that might be interested in taking over the program. We also have to think about what implications that will have for other riders that are part of the team. Also, Liberty spent $4.2 billion on a brand, which essentially has four bikes that might go missing. Now, that means that there are a variety of options and considerations here to explore when it comes to restructuring, because obviously everybody would love to have the brand there. KTM, I don't know why. I mean, look at them in the Dakar, they're doing great. Like, it's like, well, maybe just stick to dirt bikes.
Maybe. I don't know, it's interesting what you said, and I haven't really thought about it like that at all. I just see them on the grid. But
well, it's funny. It's something like, and I just took that what you said. They're putting this ploy out that they're testing this 850 bike, and is it a media stunt to get more investment? I mean, that would be that's a really interesting take.
Yeah, never have not heard that one.
Yeah, that's what we have the investment man on.
I don't know. Hey, but that's like a whole separate episode. Like, I have a lot of thoughts around that.
Yeah, we know you have to run soon, but yeah, we appreciate your time tonight. It's been
of course, really good, man.
Yeah, it's been good.
I love talking to you guys.
Yeah,
I love talking to you guys. I'm glad we got this in. So hopefully we'll do another.
We got you the 45 anyway.
Hi, how's that?
We snuck you up. That's another. We've got another 10 minutes out of you.
That's perfect. No,
we're good at that.
It's all good.
Dario, it's all good. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Guys, thank you. Always enjoy being there.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
All right. Cool.
See you.
Cheers,
bye.
Bye.